Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today we'll look again at propaganda. We'll hear from John Pilger, Margaret Kimberly, and a hilarious 1972 propaganda film praising America. I hope you'll stay tuned. It's our last broadcast of this year, and I'm sure you'll join me in wishing a heartfelt good riddance to 2011. Two major rays of hope did penetrate the gloom this year. One is the Arab Spring, which blossomed in Tunisia, then Egypt, Bahrain, and elsewhere. The other is the Occupy movement in the U.S. and kindred movements throughout the world. For years I've been moaning, when will Americans turn off their damn TVs, arise from the sofas of their home entertainment centers, get out in the streets, and protest a little? The answer is 2011, the year tens of thousands of Americans decided that some things are much, much more important than who got voted off Dancing with the Stars this week. And maybe they learned something about how police forces respond when civil liberties and democracy nonviolently threaten business as usual and corporate profits. This is not news to us graybeards, whose memories go back to the 1960s. But police brutality to stifle peaceful opposition to established power may have been news to some of the young, middle-class white folks lately on the receiving end of the pepper spray and the truncheons. Police brutality may have been news to people whose view of the police were formed mostly by watching TV shows. Apparently, the cops don't act like that on CSI. Which brings us to our focus today, propaganda. Of course, television is almost nothing but propaganda. Non-stop propaganda in both news and entertainment. Every channel is owned by a large for-profit corporation. Make an exception for PBS if you really care to. And every channel is funded by revenues, commercials, from large for-profit corporations, and that includes PBS. Consequently, everything broadcast is friendly to the interests of the corporate network owners and the corporate sponsors. That is, everything broadcast advances the interests of the ruling 1%. As the Occupy movement correctly noted, these interests are generally the opposite of the interests of us lowly 99%ers. You might find some moderate criticism of the system on a couple of foreign broadcasters. Certainly not the BBC, but sometimes Al Jazeera and Russia Today. But in all likelihood, you can't watch either of these networks on your TV. You might ask your corporate-owned cable operator why not. I haven't watched TV for 15 or 20 years, I forget exactly. My house does not contain a functioning TV set. I wouldn't dream of urging anybody to join me. I'll just report that my family is doing nicely. Not considering financial matters, of course. My son has managed to survive 14 years without either TV or his own cell phone. And he's no stranger than any of his 14-year-old friends. But even if you ditch the TV set, you're still flooded with propaganda advancing the interests of the ruling elite. Even the elite print media, like the government, are owned by the big corporations. The propaganda the elite media dispense is more subtle than what you get from the Fox TV networks, but it's doing the same thing and for the same purposes. Both John Pilger and Margaret Kimberly stress the elite media's propaganda by omission. If I could add my own note, we saw this plenty in the run-up to the Iraq invasion. The massive public protest and huge demonstrations against the war, before it started, were grossly underreported, or more often simply not reported. Meanwhile, the press reported in great detail every extravagant claim about Saddam Hussein made by every government spokesperson. Other omissions. The Bush administration spokespersons were lying through their teeth, and plenty of evidence contradicted their claims. The contradictory evidence didn't get reported. The false statements did. That's objective reporting. Colin Powell said A, B, and C. The press reported that Colin Powell said A, B, and C. End of story, and we'll have another story tomorrow. Here's journalist and filmmaker John Pilger. He spoke at the Rebellious Media Conference in London on October 8. Here he's interviewed by journalist Kate Fairfax immediately afterwards. They mention a new movie of his. That is the documentary The War You Don't See, and it's about the role the press plays in promoting war.
Your colleague in the session, Mark Curtis, was saying that media has a very major role to play in spreading disinformation and deception. Could you just say a little bit about how that happens?
It happens mainly because the media say they report wars, but in fact they promote wars. It's almost a role. It's not a sinister. It's sinister for us watching it, but that's their job, in a sense, as being as an extension of media. The media isn't independent of great power. It isn't independent of governments in free societies. It's an extension of it. So when the elite in free societies, so-called free societies, is challenged, the media comes to its aid. So the challenge being a war, particularly an unpopular war. So the media's role is really beating the drums of that war, giving it a certain legitimacy.
How do you think those drums are beaten? Because in your session you specifically mentioned the role of journalists and you referred to embedded journalists.
By leaving things out.
Omissions?
Omissions, censorship by omission. It's the most virulent form of censorship. For instance, we now have the invasion, occupation, whatever you want to call it, of Libya. And I mentioned that today a city near Tripoli, Sirte, is being bombed around the clock by NATO using fragmentation bombs and Hellfire missiles and so on. There is virtually no sense, we have virtually no sense of what that city is going through, in the same way that we had no sense of, say, how people suffered in the city of Fallujah in Iraq. We have no sense, really, of how people in village after village in Afghanistan suffer when they're attacked at night. So what I'm saying is that we get no understanding from the media of the sheer scale of civilian suffering, and civilians are in effect the enemy.
You talked about the scale of it as being the story of modern war that is not told.
It's the scale of civilian suffering. I mean, in the First World War, the great majority were soldiers. They blew each other to bits. The Second World War, it came down. Vietnam, civilian deaths became... When the majority of casualties were civilians. After that, Iraq, something like 90%. In Afghanistan, the majority. So these are wars against civilians. Now, yes, we get stories of individual civilian suffering and casualties, but they're seen as blunders and mistakes and isolated. We rarely get a sense. For example, in Iraq, if you take the John Hopkins survey of civilian casualties, that now equals, if not passes, the number of deaths, the Fordham University estimate of the deaths in Rwanda. So more than a million people. We understand that a terrible thing happened in Rwanda. But in understanding what we did in Iraq, we have no sense of that.
And you were also discussing when journalists actually take a role to promote or amplify deception rather than interrogating it. You gave an example from the US.
Yes. In my film, I interviewed Dan Rather, who is the most famous anchor for many years, CBS anchor, CBS News, and he said that, in his view, that had journalists in the United States, where the media is especially powerful because it enjoys this huge freedom, constitutional freedom, had they done their job, had they challenged and investigated and exposed the lies that led up to the invasion of Iraq instead of amplifying and echoing them, then in his view, that invasion would not have happened.
So what about the idea that journalists are complicit in war crimes? Is that your view?
Well, that's what he's saying. That's the implication of what he said. And in my film, as David Rose of The Observer, it was responsible for some of the most impressive disinformation. And Rose said that he was lied to. The Observer published a lot of material from Rose, given to him by through CIA-inspired sources, that there were weapons of mass destruction, and there were not. Rose now says that it's this kind of journalism that does qualify journalists to have blood on their hands. Yes.
Should they be prosecuted?
Yes, of course. Crimes are crimes. They should be prosecuted. But there is no mechanism for prosecuting. We don't prosecute Westerners unless they're Milosevic and one or two official demons. We prosecute mainly, yes, we prosecute peoples from the Balkans or we prosecute people from Africa. But the greatest war criminals, of course, are within our own midst, our own leaders, just in the sheer numbers of people that have been killed or have suffered or have been dispossessed by the actions of people like Blair.
John Pilger. Commentator Margaret Kimberly has some similar thoughts. Here's a piece she published in Black Agenda Report, November 22. I've condensed it a bit for radio. Its title is Propagandized America. When Americans think of propagandized people, they think of the Soviet Union, or Nazi Germany, or perhaps a banana republic dictatorship. Very few would think of themselves as being under the sway of a government and corporations that work hand in glove to tell outright falsehoods or hide important information that is inconvenient for them. But our government is intent upon keeping us misinformed or silent in the face of its wrongdoing. And they work hand in hand with a media almost entirely owned by huge corporations. The interests of the big corporations are seldom the interests of the people. These two forces work together to misdirect our attention or to tell us outright lies. Almost every major news story is an example. We are told that Iran is on the verge of acquiring nuclear weapons capability. But we are not told that it has the right to do so as a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. To add insult to injury, there isn't any proof that Iran has even acquired this capability. But Israel is chomping at the bit to attack Iran, and the United States of America will not stand in its way. The government and the corporate media never tell us that Israel, a country which is not a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, Israel has an arsenal of nuclear weapons. Israel, which casts itself as the victim of a potential nuclear power, is itself nuclear. This demonstrably true fact is rarely mentioned. Government sources say are the buzzwords for falsehoods told in the name of the state. Prestigious publications will print the most outrageous information without attribution, investigation, or proof. The Washington Post printed a story, quoting an anonymous source, claiming that Gaddafi's Libya not only was in possession of a mustard gas stockpile, but also that the mustard gas was supplied by Iran. Our system rewarded the liars in both government and the media, the liars who drove America to war against Iraq. the anti-Iran warmongers will probably fare equally well. Foreign policy long has been the domain of the big lie. But reporting on important domestic issues, too, is either twisted in favor of the powerful or not done. The sins of omission are as dangerous as the sins of the bold-faced lie. Did any major newspaper report on the week-long Georgia prison strike, which took place 1 year ago? This phenomenal story of incarcerated Bloods and Crips working hand in hand with members of Aryan Nation should have been front page news, but it was ignored. We lost an opportunity to be informed that our nation has the largest prison system on the planet, and that it profits quite literally from slave labor. Anyone who is resistant to the notion that this country is awash in propaganda need look no further than the case of Anwar al-Awlaki. President Obama ordered the killing of this American citizen who is never charged with a crime. The president then directed his minions to leak to the New York Times the existence of a secret extra-legal memo which justifies his actions. The Times transmitted the propaganda and ignored the role that a newspaper ought to play in reporting a story that should have resulted in a presidential impeachment. Americans love to say that they live in the greatest country in the world. Such a people will be hard-pressed to admit that they can trust little of the information they get. The union of a corrupt government structure and a corporate media results in nonsense on a good day and disinformation on a bad one. So ends Propagandized America by Margaret Kimberly. Well, the propaganda Margaret Kimberly and John Pilger focused on is everywhere, and it's often hard to detect. To be aware of an act of propaganda by omission requires knowing some things beyond what the news report reports. Older propaganda is more fun because we can really see the manipulation. Recall the year 1972. The obscene Vietnam War is raging. Students particularly, soon to be drafted, are outraged. Some even take over college buildings in protest. That year, something called the National Education Program of Searcy, Alabama, decides to make a film showing student protesters the error of their ways. Or maybe its purpose is to persuade the police to go ahead and shoot the ungrateful communist bastards. Talk about propaganda by omission. This one focuses on campus protests without ever hinting at the main cause, the Vietnam War. Well, I think the film is a hoot, and I hope you'll get a kick out of it, too. It's called Tragedy or Hope. We'll hear a few minutes of it.
Now, why should a normally decent, normally intelligent young person like John Smith choose the road to communism over America and freedom? For one thing, our youth of today are the object of the most extensive, intensive, diabolical campaign ever conceived. Organized and directed by our and their worst enemies. On many of our nation's platforms, radical speakers make a well-paid living going around, many of them subsidized by the communists, telling our young people what's wrong with America. On such a platform, we have seen many self-proclaimed communists and revolutionaries, radical spokesmen for various groups and professions, and sometimes even prominent political figures, all joining in a movement with which the subversive communists plan to destroy America. And why do so many of our young people fall for it? Some of it, of course, is mass hysteria, not stopping to think things through, not stopping to analyze the character or the motives of who's talking. A typical line from such rabble rousers is,
"If America don't come round, America should be burnt down."
Why do they swallow a line like this? Well, they think they want to be different. They want to do their own thing, lead their own life, which too often means wreck their own life. It is true there are things wrong in this country. There are social and economic inequities. They are being leveled off more and more all the time. But not by scenes like these. And not by our friend John here, so far. In fact, he's a prime example of what's wrong today. To begin with, he's a victim of irresponsible parentage. He has missed the stabilizing influence of a good home and religious upbringing. He has been listening to the wrong people. He has gone in for drugs, loose morals, and wanton destruction. He blames it on what's wrong with America. Well, maybe it's time some of us should start reminding him what's right with America. You imply that it's wrong to ignore all the things that are wrong in this country.
Well, of course it's wrong.
All right, then why isn't it just as wrong to ignore what's right in America?
Because there's more wrong than right.
No, come on now, John. Look, you've got a notebook there. Just make note of some of the things that are right, huh? All right, now how do you judge a country? Where should we begin? Maybe we ought to start with the number of people that want to move here compared to the number of people that want to get away, huh? Remember, there are no walls or barbed wire to keep people here who don't want to stay. I've noticed even the ones who complain the loudest don't want to leave. Compare them with the millions who want to get in. Every year, people risk their lives to escape other countries hoping to reach America. Many die trying. And why do they think it's worth risking their life to get here? Freedom. That's the answer. And the highest living standard in the world.
Not for everybody. Not in the slums and the ghettos.
On the contrary, it's one of the harsh realities of life that every country has its different levels of subsistence. But bracket for bracket, even the poorest here live much better than their counterparts anywhere else in the world. To have good living conditions, you have to have good working conditions, both in and outside the home. We have the best working conditions both places. An infinite variety of home appliances, furnishings, and services to make housework immeasurably easier. On the farm and in the factory, the number and variety of power tools, ingenious machines, and labor-saving techniques make the job so much easier for the working man. Now, what does all this add up to, huh? Look, here we are. We make up 6% of the world's population, and yet we produce more than 50% of its manufactured goods. Our little 6% right here produces as much as the rest of the world combined. Now, isn't that remarkable? The average American citizen's living standard, measured in wealth and purchasing power, is twice that of the average citizen of other countries, three times better than most countries. And four times better than Russia. Now, doesn't that begin to tell you something?
Sure, if you want to measure greatness by purely selfish materialism, sure.
All right, then how do you want to measure it?
Well, there are other values, you know.
Now, wait a minute, just a minute. What's wrong with this type of materialism? I mean, it's the difference between life in the jungle and life in civilization. And what other values are you talking about, anyway? Cultural? Ethical?
Yeah, among others.
Well, it's materialism that fosters those values, among others. Materialism provides the money with which we can build and equip the most schools, the most churches, the most hospitals, the most libraries, and the most research centers. And as for being purely selfish, John, come on, use your intelligence. You know that the communist line is based on the big lie. They pull off some fiendish, indefensible act against a helpless nation or individual, and then they shout down world criticism by pointing at us and calling us capitalistic aggressors. For example, they suddenly attack Hungary. America protests, whereupon they accuse us of imperialistic provocation. Or another example, There's an earthquake or other catastrophe, perhaps in a communist country. Because Americans believe the cry of a child is as pitiful in a communist land as anywhere else, we rush great stores of medicine, food, and warm blankets to the stricken area. And what do the commies do? They remove all USA identification and replace with communist labels before distributing them. Then, set up the howl that America is selfish for not helping more. When the plain fact is, America is the most generous country on earth. Through our churches, American Red Cross, care packages, and the government itself, we have provided foreign aid to more than 100 countries, running into countless billions. The United States has given more to needy nations, including communist countries, than all the communist countries put together have given to other nations throughout all time. Now, sure, of course, they're going to say that we're selfish. That's the way they operate. And others just parrot the communist line. On the other hand, outright gifts are only one way America aids other nations. As we constantly raise our standard of living, the spin-offs raise standard of other countries. America is the world's greatest inventor and perfecter. I said we were inventors and perfectors. Now, we didn't invent electricity. But the basic facts of electricity were known some 2,000 years before there was an America. By scientists in Greece and in England and in Germany. And for 2,000 years, nobody knew what to do with it. It remained for Benjamin Franklin to harness it. And his inventions were the basis from which later Americans invented and developed the electric light and the telephone, intercontinental radio, motion pictures, television, and so on.
Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal.
My baby.
Send me a kiss by wire.
Other Americans have given the world the automobile, steamships, trains, planes, refrigeration, and the mechanized home, factory, and farm, and most of the medicines now used around the world. Again, some of these were known, or at least suspected in rudimentary form, but it remained for America to really develop them and give them to the rest of the world to enjoy. And mind you, John, America is only 300 years old, really just 200 years old as a nation. And yet, these 200 years, largely due to America, has seen the development of mankind as a whole increased astronomically over all the thousands of years before that put together. Now tell me, John, what does this country have to do to rate your respect and admiration?
They don't make propaganda like they used to. But as we saw, they are still making it. Thanks for listening to New World Notes. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. It'll get to my non-carborundum, and have a good new year.